It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This is shaking now, and I'm kind of nervous.
All right, well, while Derek tries to get himself down.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
If he can get, there he goes. We're all right.
Sports Talk Saturday.
If I got injured on the air and everyone heard it, is that a good worker's comp case?
Probably be the easiest one. And I feel like it'd probably be the first time it ever happened here.
Hold it! We also heard it be my own fault, so.
Well. Yeah.
So yeah, no, it actually wouldn't even be cut and dry at all.
It'd just be funny.
On WGR.
It'd be a great open.
Sports Radio 550.
You know, maybe like I take one of these rolling chairs and like just crash myself into the wall. Good morning, everyone. I'm sad.
I'd crash you into the wall if you want.
Please don't. It's a bit. But I am kind of sad because I can't wear that that ultimate drip known as my Purdue jersey anymore.
It's unfortunate the water's not boiling.
It the only thing that's boiling is my rage because of March Madness.
Yeah.
And
this year more than others.
And Evan,
sure.
Evan, you did a great job. You had to play that clip, though. Man.
Was that by design?
Yes. It wasn't. It was nothing against...
It was also the buzzer beater, like, of yesterday's games, it was the best game.
I don't think you should look at it as...
It was the closest game, I should say. And that's the thing. Like, if my team is going to bow out in a tournament where no one lower than a 3 seed is making the Elite Eight, I guess I don't want to go out like a chump and it requires up until the very last second to lose. So, Purdue, great run this year. Love that. And hope you guys can actually string this sort of consistency together now, year in and year out. They made the championship last year. They lose. And then with no Zach Edey, they go right back to it and get themselves into the Sweet 16. And with less than a second left, a bid for the Elite Eight is gone. Taken away. in the arms of angels.
Yeah, you know, it's either that in the arms of the angels, or it's The Sound of Silence by like Disturbed. Like it's one of the two. One of the two.
Either way, yeah, a part of me feels fairly defeated walking in this morning.
My brackets are blown up as well. I don't even. So.
It's not about the bracket for me, man. I picked Purdue.
Yeah, but the invigorating energy is now gone. It's an afterthought.
Every
now.
Second of my passion about March Madness heading into the tournament is gone.
Yeah.
And it mostly has to do with the fact that it's 1-2, 1-2, 1-3. 1-2.
Little variation in
and
there.
And the only other way that there would have been variation is if Purdue brought the noise and put a 4 seed into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, all 4 1 seeds make it. Almost all of the 2 seeds make it. This is 2007.
Yeah, I was 5. I vaguely remember.
We're back to
the aging.
No, we're back to the wheelie chair into a wall idea this morning. Thanks. Mm. I was 5.
I apologize.
I was 5. Thanks, Joe.
I went from like in multiple brackets I'm in actually across different apps. I went from first in almost every single one of them because I had an electric start.
Yes.
To just dropping down some 5th, some 13th, most like 130th. So we really took a tumble once Michigan dumped out of there for mm-hmm. me. That was my go all the way guy. But I still have the other teams are pretty okay. Like I had Purdue dropping, like things like that. So Michigan's the only one, but that's, again, the winner for me. So like that very yeah. much handicaps my bracket. So it's yeah. unfortunate, but that's the point of March we're in.
Yeah. But it's also like, I do think that I like more of the drama of March Madness. And then, you know, obviously at this point, this is where things will start to slow down for you as well. In terms of your upsets and your things like that.
Yeah. Is a 2-1 really
not that much of an upset at this
yeah,
point.
But like that's what I'm saying. Like, yes, technically they are the underdog. And yes, the betting odds will have them as an underdog. But is it really that much of an upset between those two teams? That's
no.
my question.
No,
because
it's not.
The way the seeding works, either
even,
you know,
a 4-1 or a 3-1 at this point would still not be a huge upset anymore. You're in that point where those seeds are predominant within where you're going to be, especially in this tournament. There were not a lot of those kinds of things. Texas Tech needing overtime to beat a 10 seed. That's where, like, if things went the other way, you got a 10 seed hanging out in the Elite Eight.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a different conversation now. But the other thing that Zach and I were lamenting yesterday was the lack of close, tight games in most of this tournament, and this round was no different. Purdue-Houston is one of those games that comes down to the last possession. Texas Tech and Arkansas, obviously being the other, going
right.
to overtime.
Yeah.
And then the other one that was, I lost it. I closed it out. I shouldn't have closed it out. Give me a second.
You're good. I don't have it either. So,
but the thing
I
is
can't
that
help you.
Of the games in the Sweet 16, only 3 of them came down to ending within one possession.
Right.
And it's like, come on. Got to have something a little bit here.
Yeah, it's not all that exciting.
Yeah, it's not as good as I was hyping it up to be when you and I, throughout the week on the nightcap, we were talking about like, hey, March Madness is here. Let's have some fun.
Well, this entire March Madness.
It was Michigan State Ole Miss, by the way.
Okay. Yes, because Ole Miss did cover their spread. They were +3.5, and they got that buzzer beater.
The thing was is that they had a buzzer beater to pull within 3.
Yeah.
It was not to try to win a game or lose a game.
It was just to put a little splash at the end. That's
yes.
all.
But it does end in one possession. So by that metric, it counts.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a little bit of an empty... it was like empty calorie scoring to end it, except for like the bettors that had the 3.5 on them.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. So, you know, it is what it is. Am I still going to watch? Yeah.
It should be still good TV.
Should be good games. But I am saying this is the 2007 bracket all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we learning here? Do you know who won in 2007? You were five.
I could not recall.
I can tell you right now.
That would be great.
It was Florida. You know who's back in the Elite Eight now with a bunch of ones and twos and that 1-3 seed there?
Florida.
Is
it going to be a full-on repeat is the question.
Don't let the Gators be good, apparently, is what needs to happen.
Yeah, that's when things just fall apart.
That's when things get boring in the tournament a little bit, okay?
I do just have to say, in general, yes, we didn't get really the upset year where there's a lot of variation.
And 07, though, was a different beast of its own because no one lower than a 7 seed made the Sweet 16.
Right.
So, like, that year was bad. But even back then, ready? There was no NIL thing. There's no NIL talk about, like, oh, it's ruining basketball. No, it's not. If NIL is going to end up ruining college basketball, it has to be over time. 1 year does not prove that. And as a matter of fact, the tournament that I brought up for everyone, you were five.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was a wee lad in kindergarten.
But the thing is that, like, 07, this sort of concept of NIL and transfer portal and how often it's used, those were figments of imagination and madness even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, that's the last time that the bracket fell this way into the Elite Eight. There are plenty of years where, like, it's typically seeded by ones and twos. But every now and then you get that, every year you typically get that team that goes, hey, what the hell's the 7 seed doing here?
Mm-hmm.
And that was missing this year. Here I am talking, lamenting a 4 seed not being able to make it, but it's personal. But I do think that overall the tournament did not have its drama and pizzazz that it usually does. And that was a lot of sentiment going in.
Yeah.
That, like, this might be dominated by the top teams. The top teams have been that good this year and that consistent. And that's kind of what happened.
Still, though, from
Houston,
a couple
the only
games,
one seed that had to sweat it out.
Yeah. Aside from a couple games that were just not great TV, this is still fun basketball to watch.
Yes, it's still good to
it's
watch.
It's exciting. It's messy. You've got crazy.
There's actual
picks
defense being played.
We were watching the one night last week, and there was a pick that was laid out looked like someone got clotheslined. Like, it was
brutal.
Just, you know, like, you think, oh, that's a nope, it's college basketball. There's, you know, yep. It's just a pick that was.
And then last week, McNeese was taking on Purdue, and I'm like, I got to keep my feelings and dial in for this last hour.
Yep.
But it's still a good product to watch because of the passion, because of the fact there's actual defense in it. Like, in the era of the three ball, especially and particularly in the NBA, you do like to see some games that does have some defense, and you can appreciate it, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
But I unfortunately do have to say, overall, this tournament has been March Madness.
Yep, I would agree.
And that's okay. Mid is average, then. Right? It's middling.
Yeah, you've set the...
It's not March Sadness.
No.
But it's meh.
What would be March Sadness? That's the question. What would have had to happen?
Every single lower seed loses their games
in the first round.
In the first round,
that would be
tragic.
Because everybody roots for the little guy.
Everyone roots for a little guy, and no, it would be pretty much like every blue blood wins, and if there's a game that's not between two blue bloods, it's the higher seed wins. That's what it would have to be. It's dominated by all power conferences in the first round.
Yeah.
That's your sadness. I hope we never see it. Because that's what makes the tournament more unique, I think, than football. Like, obviously, the playoff expanding the way that it did, you're going to see teams that are making the college football playoff that typically wouldn't. However, at the end of the day, in college basketball, you are going to see teams every now and then that you do not know of that are going to make an appearance into the Elite Eight or into even the Final Four.
Yeah.
Like, Loyola Chicago
mm-hmm.
from a couple years ago. Like,
Yeah, who would have thought?
What is that to most people? And
that's a joke on a bracket someone makes.
Exactly.
And like, oh, I'm going to change this game up just to see what happens on bracket number four. Yeah,
I'm going to put Loyola Chicago in the Final Four. It's like, what? You're going to do what?
Yeah.
Are you okay? Do you need to go to the hospital? So every year there is something like that, but this year there wasn't. And that's okay. It's just, you know, I'm going to call it like I see it, which is, this is the 2007 bracket. Ones, twos, and then and there's this random three seed. That's all it is. Everyone's showing up here. It's all the ones and twos, and then Texas Tech shows up, and everyone's like, wait, what are you doing here? Where's St. John's? We beat the team that beat the team. We beat the team that beat St. John's. So we're here instead. We're three, though. You don't have to feel threatened. Oh, okay. That's all it is. That's all it is. But I will say, thank goodness that there were at least a couple of closer games last night. And now there better be single-digit point games going forward.
Yeah, if they're the best of the best, they should be close. It should be.
If every one seed blows out the twos and the three, I'm probably going to complain again.
Might be holes through televisions across America if that happens. Minus in
no,
those.
It'll just be people going, okay, whatever. The one seeds are just going to dominate this year.
I know some people that the one seeds were all out. That's what I'm saying. Like they took the twos all the way.
But that's the thing. It's like, I don't know, man. Like apparently Duke is that good.
Well,
and
Duke, I mean, Duke is the majority pick, I feel like, to win. Duke and Florida. Those are the two.
Which is weird because Duke typically is a team that you don't trust.
No. But this season, they look like the real deal, I guess.
You could look like the real deal and still have one bad game in March.
Oh, right. I'm not discounting that, but
and
they're playing like they should be.
And
like,
typically, Duke does that.
Yeah. But this year, they're playing up to the billing of the one. So
they typically do that, though.
Yeah.
They'll have the seasons where they're like a one seed and they'll lose somewhere within like the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. And, well, here's your chance, I guess. But it's the times where they'll lose in 32 or they'll lose in the 16. And it's like, oh, all right, cool. Duke fans are going to light their bracket on fire. I don't really have much recollection on when they win, what seed they are. But it's also pretty tough to go start to finish looking like the real deal, staying like that as a one and going all the way through it.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but you figure it out. Yeah, it just, for me, like, I still enjoyed it, and I'm going to keep watching. I'm a little sad. There's no Cinderellas, because that's Zach is right when he says, like, eventually you want the Blue Bloods to show up at this time of year anyway. But you do want to see that Cinderella and see just how far can you get things going.
Right.
How far can you get? And the best Cinderella that we got was Arkansas in overtime in the Sweet 16. That was the last glass shoe to fall off.
So, that's a shame. At least that game went to overtime.
And at least Arkansas was there in the fight and in overtime. If you're going to go out, don't go out like a chump. That's all you got to say. Purdue, not chumps. Ole Miss, not chumps. Arkansas, not chumps.
Mm-hmm.
BYU, chumps.
Yes. I had BYU drop in the first game.
Alabama put up over 100.
Talk about a team that's raining threes.
Yikes.
Alabama, oh my God.
I mean, it makes sense with a Nate Oates school because of how UB played. They were playing a lot of small ball tactic.
Yeah.
And that's going to require, you need range. And in Alabama, it does look like Oates is doing the same thing, except with the money and backing of an SEC school, a top-tier SEC school.
Yes.
Alabama was not a basketball school when he got there. As a matter of fact, the program was a little bit of a mess.
That's why they brought him in.
But they also know that they have so much money thanks to the football team. and their success, and prestige, and Nate Oates can turn around to recruits and say, hey, you know how those guys with the football team are so popular at the school? Let's keep the popularity going around all year, as a matter of fact. Make you guys a little bit of the star of the show. And it's working. He's taking Alabama and making them one of the most consistent teams every year. The Alabama's not a team that's bowing out early anymore. They used to be a team that just wouldn't show up.
Yeah, right. Right. They weren't built for it yet.
Not even that. They just were bad. And it's good to see Nate Oates continuing to thrive. We miss you. Come back.
Yeah, I guess that's a little bit of a local rooting interest, but I mean, the tournament does return to Buffalo
next year
to be played. You know, and it would be nice to have a local rooting interest, but I just don't know if we're there yet.
The games we will get are those madness games. You're going to get a crazy upset somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's too soon to say that NIL is the problem. Like NIL and the transfer portal are the problems. No, not yet. It needs to be sustained. It has to be like this for years in order for that to be a popular opinion or potentially correct opinion. It's got to last for a bit. You can't call it 1 year and say, oh, it's transfer portal and it's NIL and these kids are all just coddled. Nope, not yet. Wait a couple years.
Yeah, you got to get a little bit more of a sample size.
Wait a couple years before you throw that nuclear take out there.
Yeah. Need more of a data pool than just 1 year.
These kids are so entitled with whatever they want to do. Nope, hang on. Slow down. Yeah, so I will say, though, it's definitely not the most exciting tournament for me, but I'm going to keep going. And yes, it does hurt that my champion is out now.
Yeah.
But anyone in my bracket pool that didn't pick a one seed, they're all in trouble now. Because nobody picked a two where I had mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So it's either you have Duke or Florida, or you have nobody. That's how it went with my friends. And there's going to be a lot of people that are the same.
Yeah. Duke and Florida, the two favorites for pick-wise, I should say. I don't know if they're actually
favorites. It's a big whoop-de-doo Basil sort of energy.
Yep, exactly. Couldn't have put that to a better reference.
Yes. So for me, it's a little bit of March sadness. It's midness, and, you know, it is what it is. But we'll shuffle things out, shift gears, come back, and hey, you know what it might be time for?
Mock draft simulator.
Oh no.
Yeah, we're gonna hit up the simulator again. Educate people on what they need to see or who they want hanging around here. Joe and I will come up with the direction we want to take in the break here and hit up a little mock draft simulator coming up next here. Sports Talk Saturday, Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly. This is WGR.
Knox will pick him up. Williams corkscrews up, off, and down! It's a two-point lead. Final seconds. Wagner with it. Driving on Hawkins. Firing off. Texas Tech has won!
Kevin Harlan, man.
Oh, yeah. There's no other voice.
If you wanted someone to give play-by-play of, like, the biggest moment of your life, it's Kevin Harlan.
Yeah.
Your wedding day. She's got the dress! Yeah. She's up the aisle!
Right.
He's got the ring!
Well, what's crazy is, so, like, say...
I would want Kevin Harlan to call the biggest highlights of my life.
Yeah. No, me too. But, like, I listened to Kevin Harlan actually... You know, not this past season, but seasons past when so the antenna broke off my old car, my old Jeep, right? And I couldn't get AM or FM radio. So unfortunately, there's an issue with the app, right? So you can't hear the actual game. You can hear the coverage around the game, but not the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go to westwood1.com, and you could just pick up the signal and play it through Bluetooth. So I listened to a lot of Kevin Harlan before I worked here, per se.
Right.
So, yeah, his voice is definitely my favorite to listen to play-by-play-wise.
Yeah, like, I get that. Like,
doesn't he get the barn burner games on TV, too? Like, they're not the best?
Well, he gets he gets good matchups. He doesn't get the best ones.
Right, Nance and Romo get the
Nance
best.
Nance and Romo are the one team for CBS, but Harlan's the two. So they don't give him the garbage. Actually, it might be Ian Eagle now that I think about it, though. So Harlan doesn't always get the best matchups, but he's always the best sounding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Harlan's either their second or their third team guy for CBS because Ian Eagle's also there.
Yes.
Ian Eagle's also very good.
They're all good. CBS has a good commentary team.
Yes.
Tony Romo sometimes. He gets a little insufferable, but better than Chris Collinsworth all the way on the other network.
So we come back, though, and we have a job to do. We have to educate the people on players that are going to be available, players that we would like to see, and how do we do that? Got to get that music.
Mock draft simulator.
Let's get a mock draft going here. We'll do another two rounds here because, again, the Bills having those 2 second round picks is very important with how things are going to go.
Yes.
I'm a cheap boy. I'm not paying for a month of PFF for 3 days.
No, there's no need to.
So I'll wait until, you know, Monday. So Tuesday. I'll wait till Tuesday.
What's Tuesday?
April.
Oh. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, I am starting to notice something, though. A lot of big boards are putting Missouri wide receiver Luther Burden down their big boards now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting kind of curious about that.
Is he just not interviewing well? Or?
Last week, I called into question why the simulator was doing that.
Uh-huh.
But now I'm seeing it on other big boards. And it's a little confusing to me. Why am I bringing this up? Because he's here again, available for the Bills at 30. Malachi Starks goes, by the way, the pick before to Washington. And I'm thinking at that point, the Bills are probably going hell or high water. No, we got to trade up and get a player like that. Mostly because Kenneth Grant's gone. And he's gone early in this one.
Okay.
17.
Yikes. That's my pick at 30, by the way, if he's there. No question.
Yeah. But also, oh boy.
What happened?
You make one bad click, you got to reset everything.
Oh no.
The Steelers taking Shedeur Sanders at 21 would be fascinating to me because that's also saying Aaron Rodgers, kick rocks.
Yeah.
You want to take your time? Fine. Fine. Be my guest.
He's going to sit in a cave for a little bit. You got to remember that.
So, Malachi Starks, by the way, falling into anything in the mid-20s, the Bills got to go and get a player like that. Like, he is someone that should not fall that far. He shouldn't. And yeah, I know, safety is not typically a high-value position to go trade up for. But I'm still going to tell you, he's that good. Speaking of safeties, Nick Amonwori, a peak my guy trademark.
Mm-hmm.
Other players available, though, would be someone like Derek Hartman on the defensive interior at D-tackle from Oregon. James Pierce Jr., edge rusher from Tennessee. Nick Scowerton from Texas A&M on the edge. There's some options. There are options here. A lot of guys that they could comfortably trade back as well and get themselves like a third-round pick again. I would hate all of that because I would have been sitting here until like 12:30 on draft night with Nate and Zach and being like, oh, they're trading out again.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Not great.
My life is hell. But if it happens, it happens. So what am I going to do? I'm going to stick to my principles here. Even though Luther Burden's available, I'm going to take Derek Hartman here out of Oregon.
Okay.
Hartman is very good player. Amonwori goes to the Chiefs, by the way, immediately after.
So. That would incite, you know.
Not really.
No? Like, you don't think so again?
I think
Say, like, going personally, into the draft, we're really pushing Evan Worry. Everybody on the station is.
The thing is that people should have their own opinions. And if I'm pushing for Nick Evan Worry, I don't need everyone to follow me. I'm not the expert here. I'm not. I'm just going with players that I like. And personally, I'd like Nick Evan Worry. I think that he is a good player, and I think that is someone that the Bills should be looking at in the 30 range because that is something that they could value.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to it, I don't know if I don't know if there's anything about this that I would hate here about Derek Harmon, 6'5", 310 pounds. Man's a big boy. He is seen as most effectively a three technique, though. So it might be a luxury good of sorts because you have Ed Oliver as well.
Right.
But Harmon does have the football IQ. He does have the quickness off the snap as well. So I would say if they end up with someone like Harmon, I'm okay with it, though. Mostly because you need more on your defensive line anyway. And then when we get to pick number 30 of round number two, excuse me, pick 56 of round two, sorry. I'm going to go ahead and just see, hey, I got a huge hole at cornerback, right? I think that someone from Notre Dame like Benjamin Morrison is a great idea here. Darian Porter out of Iowa State. Paul would be really happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of corners that you'd be able to take here and you have options. But also, this is the last, those two are the last bit of that second tier of corners that would be available for you. Would be players like Porter or Benjamin Morrison. I'm going with Morrison. I think that he's a very good player from an elite Notre Dame defense. And there could be questions about, like, hey, is he the sum of the parts because of just how good that defense was? Or is it because of players like Morrison that are blue chip players that he'll be able to stand out on his own? Morrison's a good player, though.
Yeah.
And I'm putting away Nate's Notre Dame bias here just so that that can happen here.
Right.
But he's capable of, based on scouting reports, he's capable of fitting any system. He can play a lot of man coverage. You know what the Bills played a little bit more of?
Man, under Mr. Babich.
Yes, Bobby Babich called a lot more man coverage. I think that this would be a great fit for them to have someone like Benjamin Morrison there. He did miss a good part of the championship run. He had a hip injury, but it does not look like it's something that's going to be long term. 6'1", 190.
Right. Considering their man coverage guy is no longer on the team, and he was hot and cold because he was never warmed up really this past season. You kind of need a guy who can step in and do that. So I'm all in on a man coverage guy.
Some of the weaknesses in Morrison's game, for example, though, being he's not the quickest of getting off of blocks, but he is a willing run defender.
Right.
So good with the bad on that sort of thing.
Yeah, and you could probably coach the getting off of blocks. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like you could fine-tune that where you want a good run defender because that's what the Bills, I think, explosive runs were a weakness for them last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the Derrick Henry thing. Like, you could just go back to that play and be like, yeah, that would be nice, you know, to have an extra guy who can stop a run.
Last one I'm going to do here with the other pick of round two. We're going to go with edge rusher Jack Sawyer. Put the highlight on Ohio State's pass rusher Jack Sawyer here. 6'5", 265. He does get pretty good with quickness off the ball. He is able to use pass rush success with bull rushes as well. Hey, the Bills just got an Ohio State pass rusher. Why not go ahead with another?
Mm-hmm.
You just signed one. Draft one. But yeah, I think Jack Sawyer would be a good pick here for them. 6'5", 260 pounds. He's seen as typically looking like a day two prospect. They're also thinking probably more of a early day two prospect.
Right.
But, hey, take what you will as the board falls for you there.
Position by position, what did you just take? Defense, right?
Defensive tackle, corner, defensive end.
All D.
So, yeah, I'm not expecting to really be worried if there's no offense in my first 2 days of draft.
No, I'm not either. I know some. I've seen this floating around. I don't know if you have. Some people want a receiver in the first round and then to move on to defense from there. And I understand.
That is their right.
I understand. And believe me, you're free to have your own opinion. But I think the bigger need currently, because we can go back to all these years where they've dropped, and yes, Josh Allen had the football last season to end it, right? But defense has been a big point of emphasis in those games. 13 seconds, right? They couldn't. Neither defense was stopping anybody. They were gassed. You need to get deeper on defense. All last season, during the season, was those games we lost. Oh, that wasn't on Josh Allen, right? That was on the defense or whatever, right? Like, yeah. In the offense. So I think defense being the point of emphasis whenever a loss comes along is telling of what should happen. That's kind of where I'm at, you know?
Yeah, I think that is absolutely something that we need to look at.
You don't want to put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. You know what I'm saying?
The emphasis?
Yeah, emphasis on the wrong syllable, but I emphasize the wrong syllable.
I hate
emphasis
so much.
On the wrong syllable.
I hate everything that you just said. Yeah. For me, I'm also looking at players in the first round, trade targets to go up for Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M, 6'6", 290. He does have himself a lot of athletic ability. He does still need to work a little bit on technique, but that can be coached.
Yeah.
Technique is always something that you can coach. If there's something technically that you need to help shape with a player, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Can't coach talent.
Trading down, by the way, to get a... like a third round pick or something like that also seems like a really good idea, because the cornerback class does, again, like I say, drop off considerably after like the first couple of players.
Yeah.
Nate is in on a player like Siobhan Revelle. Revelle is a player that is in that second tier.
Okay.
So is a player like I had mentioned with Morrison. Darian Porter from Iowa State. He's got length, man, 6'4". So you got a tall corner there. Revelle, 6'3", 193, by the way, out of East Carolina. So these are names to start familiarizing yourself with, because there's a couple of players that should go early. Hunter, Jadae Barron from Texas, Will Johnson from Michigan. But then after that, that's the second tier. You got Trey Amos from Ole Miss, Hairston from Kentucky, Morrison from Notre Dame, Revelle from East Carolina, Darian Porter from Iowa State. Those are the guys in that second tier of corner that you could absolutely have within the second round. So it's tough to get a corner in the first round based on positional value and where it's going. But if you trade down into the second round, again, you have 3 second-round picks. First of all, holy nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a third then, you're probably looking at maximizing your capabilities at that point.
Yeah. And where do you stand,
considering where they're picking, if you're not trading up, I would love to trade down.
Yeah.
If you're not going to get a player like a Shamar Stewart or... a Kenneth Grant.
Right, you're not going to make the jump for the guy.
Or Malachi Starks, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Even trying to get Will Johnson if he's in range. If you don't get aggressive to move up into the high 20s, probably, for a player, my guess is they're going to trade down, because then you can actually maximize your value of what you can get. Because if you trade down out of the first round, you're probably going to get a third-round pick in return. And if you're able to do that, that gives you 4 picks in the first 3 rounds instead of the 3 that you had. Because you move down your early second round, you have the other 2 second rounders, and then you have a third rounder. Again, which they love having a third rounder.
They do.
They also do a typically good job within the third round. It's one of their better rounds. If you look at Brandon Bean's draft history, the one that is more flawless in terms of getting pure production out of players is their 4th round, but they don't pick many times in there. It's kind of funny. Ray Davis is their low point, and that's only because he played 1 year.
Exactly.
Like, Gabe Davis didn't get a second contract, but he did give you production for a couple of years as a solid complementary wide receiver to your core as a wide receiver 3.
Exactly.
And Taron Johnson has been on this team since the moment he's been drafted and still here. That's it. That's the list of 4th round picks they've had.
Not many.
Incredible hit rate. Do it more.
Yeah. If you're successful there, let's uptick the amount.
But typically, if you're moving and shaking around the board, the 4th round pick is one of the picks that has to go.
Yeah. Here's my question to you. With the current, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week, but with the James Cook stuff going on the way
yes.
it is. Do they nab a running back here at all?
I would say it's a good idea. The question's when.
That's my question. Like, when would you foresee them possibly doing that?
I'm thinking round three is probably where you should do it.
Because honestly, the running back class this season, this draft year, sorry, very deep.
It does seem like it's a very good draft class. If I'm looking at someone, I'll tell you right now, probably a good player with both speed and size.
Mm-hmm.
DJ Giddens out of Kansas State.
Okay.
6'1", 212. He's got a good one-cut style, which works very well in the Bills system. Because zone defense, you want that one-cut, you go.
Exactly.
You want a guy who's able to see the hole, hit the hole. And attack that way. Very aggressively.
Mm-hmm. Because I think we're going to get to the point where the, you know, the $15 million is just too rich that James Cook
wants.
The
one thing that he's not a very physical runner for his size. He's 6'1", 212. But he doesn't have that, like, physicality.
He's not
going
to bulldoze through people.
He doesn't seem to bulldoze through people as well as he should based on his size.
Okay.
But that said, ready? I'm okay with that right now as a rotational player.
Yeah. You have Sweet Baby Ray who can do that and Ty Johnson.
Yeah.
So... the way they
Johnson's
also
more of a smaller guy, but if you're drafting a running back, by the way, someone's leaving the team.
Right.
So unless you're getting clear communication that James Cook is not going to play or
exactly.
He's going to hold out,
that's why I asked the question.
You need clear communication about that, and if they do it, that is more of an indicator.
Yes,
I don't expect it to happen. Mm-hmm. I expect Cook to play out his contract.
Oh, and he'll finish the contract. I think they draft running back next season.
Yes.
I think that's what happens.
And again, if there is a running back taken this year,
it's pretty telling.
A clear telling sign about something going on.
Yeah. The writing's on the wall at that point if they're drafting a running back.
Exactly.
But I think they take it next year.
Or they're also willing to lose a guy like a Ty Johnson, for example. They'd be willing to part with that and then like replenish through free agency again.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Leonard Fournette's looking to make an NFL return. So,
why?
Did you see that?
Why?
I don't know. All right, after sitting last season out, he's ready to come back. I don't know how that's going to go, but good luck, Leonard.
Yeah.
He was a Buffalo Bill for a short stint.
But
maybe he will be again.
I'm going to tell you, there's a couple of those my guys, Shamar Stewart, Kenneth Grant, seems to be like everybody's guy at this point for the Bills.
I think that name has become universal
he's probably
in a lot of ways.
That.
Yeah.
Malachi Starks is probably unrealistic at this point, but Nick Emmanuel sure as hell is for me. And
Evan Worry, I would love. That would be a phenomenal pick if they did that. It's all about how the board falls. I mean, we could sit here and do as many mock drafts as we want.
Yeah,
we won't know what's going to happen until that night.
It's more about trying to get name familiarity out for people at this point.
Yes.
And looking at it that way. But I think Shamar Stewart would be great for this team. I also think Mykel Williams out of Georgia is another one of those pass rusher types that he'd be able to set the edge for you. Yeah, you got Joey Bosa. That's a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
Draft a guy anyway. Draft a good player.
Draft somebody so you don't have to re-sign a bigger name so that you can develop him and keep him on that rookie deal. Like that's what you really want.
Or have to keep going over and over again to the one-year well or a two-year well.
Right.
Darius Alexander, by the way, he's another guy that, you know, he's got some size to him. Harmon does have size to him as well. Grant is on another level of just how big that man is, 6'3", 339. But there are some there's a lot of good players here this year. Day two, players like Alfred Collins out of Texas. And if I need to say it in front of Zach, hey, man, he'll probably look at me and go, no, that's a good player to have with the size that he does, 6'5", 320, for example.
Mm-hmm. What do you have to say?
That's a day two pick right there.
Yeah.
So come back. You know what we got to do.
Yep. It's that time.
Booty Cheek of the Week coming up next.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire.
Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the booty cheek of the week.
I hate you so. I love that it catches me saying I hate you so much right at the end of that clip.
Yes. I don't. The button was taken away. I don't have it today.
Good.
I can't make any fart noises when we talk about. You know
who. We will talk about the Buffalo Sabres. As
I know.
Fact.
Yeah, because we are. We're going to lead right into the pregame show.
Yes, we are. But that's not what I need to talk about here today. We need to talk about the booty cheek of the week. So let's have it.
Yeah?
Yeah, let's have it.
Let's have it.
Let's have it.
There's a war going on.
There's a war going on?
On many fronts.
Careful about your next words.
LeBron James and Stephen A. Smith. The saga continues. We're on like episode 2 right now. Attack of the Clones. The not great one.
It has its moments.
Well, LeBron.
Every Star Wars movie has its moments.
It does have its moments. That's my take.
And you'll never take that away from me. Anyway, carry on.
Slaughtering the people is pretty cool. Pat McAfee has somehow entered into this by having LeBron on his show on ESPN while all this is going on. And LeBron James, he's not my favorite athlete because I think he just brings a lot of whatever to the conversation and
him nonsense.
And, yeah, exactly. That's the good word for it. Nonsense. But clearly, after this beef is going on, you go onto the station that Stephen A. is a part of and do an interview when you are not one to do sit down interviews on mm-hmm. shows. Like he's not that guy. He posted a video of Stephen A. Smith training boxing.
Oh boy,
it is not pretty. And he put the meme attached to it. Womp, 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 womp. Right?
Oh, no.
So it's just called him out on social media. We've gotten to the point now. And this is the point of the booty cheek.
Is Stephen A trying to box for some reason?
No, probably just.
Just a hobby workout?
Workout, okay. Yeah. You know?
All right, then it's pretty childish from LeBron.
Right. This whole situation's childish because it all started after. A few weeks ago, remember my booty mm-hmm. cheek from a few weeks ago? The whole call out of Bronny James and saying,
right.
You can't talk about my son that way. And then Stephen A. addressing that on the air. That's where this all started. This is now.
Yep.
This is now stemmed from that.
So the first part of this was the grill was opened up. And
yep.
Now this is
the patties
beef.
Are on.
The beef has hit the grill.
Exactly. And this is exactly why sports shows on television, the debate format, I have to have a take, also should not be personal.
Yeah.
Keep your personal life out of it.
Not to mention for the and this is what I'm going to say against LeBron here. It's your son is a professional athlete.
Exactly.
It comes with the territory now.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
You were not free from criticism. He cannot be free from criticism. Nobody can be free from criticism. Not even us.
The ninth man on like the Minnesota Timberwolves can be subject to public criticism.
Exactly.
It is a fact that you, LeBron James, had a factor in LA drafting your son so that you could play with him.
I want to play with my son.
And
so it ruined the game, integrity of the game for me.
Not even that. It's not about the integrity. It is, yeah, you had a selfish desire. Guess what's going to happen?
You're going to get called out for it.
It's going to get called out because the attention was brought to it. And it's your fault, not his, not Stephen A's, because of the fact that he had to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to make it happen. And I get it. It is something personal. Because he wanted to do that before he retires. And the best way to have control for that was to make sure that LA actually drafted him. But when you do something like that,
yeah,
you bring attention to a player, in this case your son,
mm-hmm. who's not asking for it.
And then Stephen A. went on to say that LeBron did not attend Kobe Bryant's funeral, even though he did.
So yeah, like check
your
facts.
There was like personal weird digs thrown in there.
Check your facts if you're going to go at somebody, buddy.
Yeah. Just weird personal attacks. Yeah, like it was not great.
Oh,
so
that's weird.
That's my booty cheek, and it's a saga at this point because it just continues between these two.
For me, it's quick. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers as a whole. Why are you still waiting on if Aaron Rodgers wants to play for you or not? As a matter of fact, you're the last team that hasn't officially moved on. But if it goes another couple weeks and Aaron Rodgers is still not signed. We all know then that Pittsburgh did make their decision.
Yes.
They're saying we're drafting someone. And we don't care. Or we're going to run with Mason Rudolph this year. We're sick of this, Aaron. Just go be a full-time fixture on McAfee show at that point. Which, if that happens, good God. That's a train wreck waiting to happen.
Yeah. I'm sure ESPN would love that. Speaking of. Yes.
Speaking of train wrecks, we got to get the show back on track here. We're late to the break, so let's get that in here on WGR.
Byram out of the corner. Kulik up top. Scores! What a shot! Jiří Kulik! And it's 5-1 Buffalo.
Jiří Kulik had himself a night on Thursday.
Sorry, and the song took over me for a second.
That's fair.
Weezer.
So, Sabres, though, they go away winning on a Pride night on Thursday night in Buffalo against Pittsburgh. They play against Philadelphia today with a chance, Joe, a real chance to get out of the Eastern Conference basement, baby.
A real Phoenix story here from the ashes.
A real opportunity.
the bird's going to rise, the firebird.
A real opportunity, though, to get out of last place in the Eastern Conference today against Philadelphia, who is the team right ahead of them. And you know what? Go get it, please. I wanted, here's the thing. It's interesting to say this 10 years ahead of time of the original Tank Brigade. But now, no, I don't care where you're drafting this year. I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if you lose a couple more games to try to better your draft position, because I can tell you right now, you're not going to do worse than Nashville, Chicago, or San Jose. Those teams are firmly below you because they are worse teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are not, like, those are bad hockey teams with next to no talent. Or, apparently, in Nashville's case, talent that does not fit together as a team. You're still four clear of Nashville. And game in hand, yada, yada. So, right now, you're fourth from the worst in the league. You're telling me that fifth worst in the league is so detrimental to you?
Mm-hmm.
Because the draft lottery still exists for all three of those picks.
That it does.
So who cares?
This, you know, I did allude
to
them.
The bleep cares about losing more games to set up for your position here?
Yeah.
No. At this point, nobody wants to hear that.
No.
Nobody wants to hear
that. People want to see product to end the season. A good product.
Give us something useful to cling on to. Something that Brian and I talked about last week, Brian Koziel and I, heading into a game last week. They did proceed to get the brakes beaten off of them by Minnesota that Saturday a week ago.
Yeah.
So hopefully not the same result here today. Though they do have a damn tough time with Philadelphia of all teams for some reason.
They do, but Tortorella is no more.
Tortorella's no more.
We don't know what could happen there. That could change things.
It also could be the new coach bump.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we thought about that, though, with the Jets this year, with the Bills, right? After they got rid of
Robert. Well, think about it.
Robert.
The first game that they play against Buffalo with the new coach bump, it's a one-possession game.
Right, a Hail Mary.
It's a one-score game.
Yeah.
It ultimately is. It comes down to the wire.
Mm-hmm. You never know.
The second time they played each other, not even close.
Not quite.
Nope.
Tyrod Taylor had to score a touchdown. not Aaron Rodgers.
Yep, love that.
This is more so what I imagine the Sabres crawling out of last
Stop.
Place.
Stop.
Like, you know,
here's,
like,
here's the thing.
Not the Phoenix rising from the ashes, but Danny DeVito
Yeah, just lathered I was going to say you can't say this is what I think and then not tell people.
I just don't want to describe exactly what it is. If you've seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you'll know. But
if they haven't, they have no idea what you're talking about anyway.
Yes.
So basically, it's still tough though. Like, I don't care about them crawling out of the basement. I care about just put together, do what you have been doing over the past few years with this team, which is March is typically fun.
It's fun but insulting.
It's fun but insulting in most years. 2 years ago, it was just straight up fun.
Oh my
because
God.
Yeah. They almost got into the playoffs.
1 point out, you think, oh, the vibe, we're only up from here. And then we're even further in the gutter two years ago,
the Sabres were the vibes team because they had just missed the playoffs by 1 point and everyone was kind of like getting sour about the Bills constantly losing in the divisional round. Cue to 2 years later. The Bills, with a bunch of lovable goofballs, go back to the AFC Championship game.
Yep.
They still lose to the freaking Chiefs, but, you know, that's their prerogative. Meanwhile, the Sabres, it was just this, I don't know, like, 2 years later, it is a different thing. Like, Cousins is already gone, and Jack Quinn looks like a shell of himself already, and you don't know what you have to pay J.J. Paterka. How much is he even really worth for the team? I think he's needed as a top six fixture on this team, so that's me. But there's a lot of questions. Goaltending, back to being the same problem that it was 2 years ago. Are they going to sign a legitimate veteran this time around?
Like, well, yeah.
Is UPL's time as a Sabre going up in smoke now? Like, everything that's happened from the last 2 years has happened. But it is to a point where there is way too much mystery on what to do next to have a solid answer.
It was tough to see it, though, right? I just me looking back. UPL, I didn't think he was going to come back last season, right? Because of the hot and cold performances that he was apt to. But guess what? He puts together an all-time season for him and makes a case, hey, I can be a starting goaltender. We're back to hot and cold. In some facet, not nearly as bad as it used to be. I'm not saying that. But we're back to that standard in a way where you don't have another answer. Craig Anderson was your answer 2 years ago. 41 years old was your answer. This year, Lindy's going a different direction regularly. Is that telling? That's what I...
It's quite telling. And the thing is that now you're looking at, with what Luukkonen has done in particular, career year... Last year, it was a career best. He wins 27 games. He actually has a winning record on the season as a whole with Buffalo last year. 27-22-4. So he actually goes with a winning record if you count the overtime losses as just losses. 2.57 goals against. 9.10 save percentage. Those things would be amongst the best that he does. And this year, he dove right back into the numbers that were from 2 years ago. 888 save percentage, 3.16 goals against, and this year, it's 23-22-4.
Yeah.
So it's not like Luukkonen is truly turning the tides at this point either. He had 5 shutouts last year. He has 2 this year.
Yeah. And it's tough because, yes, you did get Devin Levi in that time. And everyone's like, let him cook. He does a great job in Rochester. Whenever he's called up to the NHL, though, it doesn't work. He's not ready.
And that's
how much
fair.
Longer? It is, because look at the way the team has developed
not
over
even the
2 years.
Ready? It's fair because Zach and I talked about this yesterday. Goalies are weird.
They take a little longer sometimes.
They take sometimes a lot longer
to
a point where you don't know what's truly happening. And you sometimes move on from a goaltender before you should. The Sabres had one of those instances. Robin Lehner. I think they moved on from him way sooner than they should have, but it was because he was losing them points in the standings because he could not solve a shootout for the life of him.
Right.
But then he goes and wins the Jennings Trophy with the Islanders. He becomes a Vezina candidate with Vegas. And it's another one of those examples of, oh, players play great when they flourish outside of Buffalo.
Unfortunately.
I would like to present to you the counter dish of Casey Mittelstadt, by the way.
Yeah. Not for that point, I have this one. Like, that's yes. Essentially what it is, because exactly. It just cancels it out.
If it happened everywhere, there'd be 31 teams trying to get players from Buffalo through hell or high water. Like, you give up 4 first-round picks at that point for a good player on the Buffalo Sabres.
Because mm-hmm. You know they're going to be lights out for your team.
Yeah. Like, you're probably trying to trade 2 firsts for Alex Tuch.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you know the answer is, oh, they get better when they play away from Buffalo, right? No, not always.
Not quite.
Like, that's not how it goes. Otherwise, teams would be trying to do that.
So I guess my question, though, like, looking at this team the way it stands right now, it's easy this season to just be frustrated with how the performance has been, right? They're, right now, we just said it. It's almost insulting, but it's fun to watch because they actually play somewhat okay hockey in the March.
And the
where
thing
do
is,
they go from here? Like, next season, what is the expectation?
So, ready? Let's talk about it one at a time. March and how it can be kind of insulting, it is because of the fact that the team has typically, with this core, gotten off to bad starts.
Extremely.
They tend to, when the second half of the season rolls around, they tend to play better.
Yeah, when the Bills are done playing football, that's normally when you see the uptick from the Sabres.
But it's also, they tend to play better. Under Jason Botterill, that core, we got the famous quote of meaningful games in March, and typically it was the home stretch that team buries itself. He said the meaningful games in March thing, and then they proceeded to collapse and take themselves out of a potential playoff run. Or they were the top team in the NHL in the standings on December 1st, and they end up finishing and drafting like 8th overall.
Mm-hmm.
In a year where St. Louis, on that same date, was finishing or was at last place in the entire NHL standings, they go to win the Stanley Cup. That was not a nice year.
No.
The Ryan O'Reilly trade, that was, you want to talk about insulting, that was kind of insulting. Like, yes, getting Tage Thompson was great, but could you imagine if the pick wasn't 31 overall? Turned out to be Ryan Johnson. What to do from here?
Mm-hmm. Because Lindy sounds like he's coming back.
There are 2 things that you want to have done. First, we have to accept the reality that Kevin Adams is going to be here, okay? Because he sounds like a man that he is not going anywhere. And he's making moves at the deadline, for instance, like a general manager who's not going anywhere. So 2 things. 1, get another top 4 defenseman. Samuelson has shown he's not it.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, if I say Matias Samuelson, 2-way Sabres fan, typically they're not going to be radio safe comments at this point.
Yeah. The FCC will be hunting you down for
like
what
if
you
I
have say, to
say something about if I say the words Matias Samuelson, 2-way Sabres fan, out near the arena, I can't promise what I say can be repeated.
And they're also going to look for him somewhere. They think he's out there.
Yeah,
run
but
after
I would like to see a top 4 defenseman, so you can pair him up reliably with power. Byram, I'm not sure what to think of him at this point. I don't know if it's that he does just genuinely play better with Rasmus Dahlin, because who doesn't? Or is he actually a capable and fine player on his own right? It's going to depend on the contract demand.
Yeah.
So you need a top 4 defenseman anyway, with the questions surrounding Byram.
It would be nice, though, to keep Byram in some facet, pair him with Dahlin, because he plays well when he's paired with Dahlin, like you said, and then get another top 4 defenseman to just pair with Power, like you said. But so you don't have to keep, oh, Power, Dahlin, you know what I'm saying? Like moving
stuff
around.
I do want to keep looking at the deployments of Jacob Bernard Docker, though,
mm-hmm.
Because he does seem to be a very reliable player in his own end.
Okay.
That is someone that Power could truly utilize. A player who stays responsible in his own end. He's a right-handed shot, so you don't have to worry about the fluctuation between the two.
Mm-hmm.
Responsible, stay at home, let Power do his thing. And the last game against Pittsburgh, oddly enough, where they score 7 goals, is the first time that Bernard Docker, since going in the lineup, did not register a point.
Yeah.
So, red-hot JBD is no more. But I think Bernard Docker is someone that you can even try to look at as a potential in-house solution.
I would still say you need a top four defenseman candidate anyway. The other thing you need is someone to help push down the order in the forward core. You need a top six forward. And when I say top six forward, I typically am trying to say try to swing big and get a top line forward.
Is that a superstar in your mind?
Yes.
Yep. You Ready? Need that superstar.
The hill I'm going to die on, and I've got plenty of reasons of why.
Mm-hmm. I think you have 14 thereabout.
I would say there's 16.
Okay.
As in the jersey number of Mitch Marner.
Okay. Okay.
Marner becoming a free agent. He's a known Bills fan. He has not signed a contract extension with Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
He's not given team-friendly deals with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, and for anyone around here to be like, oh, we hate Toronto, we don't want blah, 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 blah. No, we're way past that. You're 14 years into a playoff drought.
No.
Absolutely not.
If that's your reasoning, come on, be real. the true counter-arguments that you'll hear from fans is about how he plays soft.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, but if you have a guy who threatens to consistently be a top five in points in the National Hockey League, that you have a chance to sign him, get him.
And you give him the opportunity, right, to lead the charge for this new team and get them into the playoffs. That might be a little bit of an incentive to be the guy that did it. Do you know what I'm saying?
And Zach said something yesterday when I mentioned it to him along the lines of, Marner's biggest question and flaw is the playoffs and his playoff performance. I'll tell you what, for at least the first year, nobody's going to care.
There are no playoff expectations than making it, baby. That's it. You could lose every game.
You can have 0 points in the playoffs and get swept.
Yes. Make it.
Make it to the playoffs, you're already considered a huge improvement, and then we can work on that ghost of yours later.
Yeah. We have the wide receiver big board. Kevin Adams' office, they have the Sabres to-do list. Giant piece of cardboard.
It's just Mitch Marner.
All it says is Mitch Marner / make playoffs.
Mitch Marner no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it should be.
Above all else, Mitch Marner.
And it's a free agent. So
I'd get his jersey right away if he came.
All you need is money. That's it.
Yeah. And you have money. You have money. Let's not sit here and act like we're cap-strapped, okay? Because that's not the case. That is not the case with the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, there's a chance. There's legitimately a chance. And I do think that there is something to be said about how, in last week, Brian Colzie and I, we had a really fun discussion about Terry Pegula and the optics of how he looks as a Sabres owner, especially with the fact that he was ranked 32nd out of 32 owners.
Mm-hmm.
How do you fix the perception? Get him on a plane, and Koziel said, get Josh Allen on that plane.
Go to Mitch's house.
Fly your ass to Toronto.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Even if you wanted to get in the car, in the motorcade, it's only an hour drive. That's the sell. Mitch, you could see Josh Allen on the daily, and it's not that far of a commute.
It's not that far of a commute, and that is something that Koziel and I talked about last week as well. There's a healthy percentage of players from Southern Ontario. It is actually supposed to be one of the Sabres' biggest recruiting tools.
Exactly.
It's how you got Jeff Skinner.
Yes. It's exactly how you got Jeff Skinner.
But Skinner was excited to play here because it was close to home.
Yeah. The sell is, you don't have to relocate completely across the United States, right? You can just cross the border. And that's
it. You're a top-tier player. You come into Buffalo, you'll be hailed as a top-tier player.
Mm-hmm.
You also have witnessed, on the football side, what it means to be great in Buffalo.
Yep. And Josh Allen said it to Joey Bosa. They're talking about a Super Bowl. It's a different situation. But if you'll be immortalized.
For example, if you make the playoffs with this team,
your name will never be forgotten.
Your name will never be forgotten because you are a drought breaker.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrod Taylor is not one of the pinnacle players of the National Football League's history.
Better than Aaron Rodgers.
I will tell you right now that in Buffalo, the man is immortalized.
Yeah, whenever he comes back, he gets a standing ovation.
He's the
hometown hero.
He is the drought breaker.
Yeah.
You look at players like him and McCoy favorably because of what they did.
Right.
Kyle Williams is a legend.
I mean, any of those guys are.
Any of those guys on that team immortalized. Well, Nathan Peterman was immortalized for a different reason, but he was on that team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
He technically has a win to his name because of it.
That's right.
Because of Joe Webb. He started that game against Indianapolis.
Yep.
The snow game.
Oh, my God. What a game, too, by the way. Like, I see the NFL film of that. I remember sitting there watching that. I couldn't believe it.
But that's the point is, you could turn to Mitch Marner and go, you're the piece we need. And you've seen it because of this 6'5 goofball right here to my right or my left,
mm-hmm.
depending on where you're standing. This guy can tell you everything about being immortalized in Buffalo.
Yep. And Terry also slips him a season ticket to Bills games. It says, you're good for it.
The Sabres have been in the suite for Bills game.
I know.
So you don't even need to slip it to him. Just be like, hey, here you go. These are yours now, too.
Just written,
go
in,
enjoy,
just written in crayon
go
on a piece
enjoy
of paper.
Game, but enjoy responsibly. That's yeah. all.
Written in crayon, Bills tickets
Bills,
on a piece of paper.
Bills
piece of loose leaf college rule paper.
All right, we'll come back. You had something to say about Stephon Diggs.
I did.
And he was introduced to New England yesterday. Some interesting quotes.
It's
not bad. Interesting, by the way.
Yeah, something to say is not negative, by the way. I just want to point that out. We'll tease it.
We'll talk more about that coming up here. Sports Talk Saturday, Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly, Sabres pregame coming up in a half hour here on WGR.
I'm excited. I really look forward to it. It's crazy because when you ask around, he has a lot of similarities where people say through the grapevine, he acts a lot like Josh, and you know, that was my guy. So I look forward to meeting and connecting with him.
Stephon Diggs introduced to the New England Patriots yesterday, and a very interesting quote there about how Josh is my guy.
Did you hear C.J. Stroud mention it at all?
No.
No. Because truthfully, I think the toxicness of their relationship is far overplayed.
It was definitely overplayed to a point, but I will say,
I think some of it's there.
Everything that I said about it on the Extra Point show is still very relevant, which is Stephon Diggs knows the type of role that he wants to have within an offense, and he still believes he can compete in said role in the offense. If he's not going to be one of the people of, I don't want to say importance, but like, he does want to be one of the guys making the contributions. He wants to be one of those guys that is making plays for the team. There's a degree of pride in that. Like, yeah, there's ego in there as well, but come on, you're an NFL player. You have to have an ego. How do you not?
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised Andrew Luck lasted as long as he did, as gentlemanly as he was.
Yeah, right.
Well, that was a great hit, man.
Like,
but even then, Andrew Luck had that too. Everyone does. You're in the NFL. You got to have a little bit of the nasty and a little bit of the ego in there. But for Stephon Diggs, he also points out, I'm one of the only receivers that had 6 1,000-yard seasons consecutively before the injury.
Mm-hmm.
The production, it's always been there. I can move the chains. I can do intermediate. I can go deep. I did it all throughout my career. My resume probably speaks for itself. But it was more so the injury that would deter or make the money that is what it is about the contract he was given.
Yeah.
He knows what he's capable of. He knows that he should be putting up these numbers. And if you look at the entirety of Stephon Diggs' timeline, when he has some sort of departure from a team, it is because of the fact that the team is moving on to a non-focal point with Diggs for his role. So he wants to go somewhere that will give him that. But I don't think this has anything to do with vengeance, trying to be salty about Buffalo and trying to play him twice a year. I think this just has to do with he knows that New England's going to give him the best situation. Ready? Look at how he got traded to Houston. And then he reworks his contract with Houston to become a free agent at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, it's theory. And I have to make sure I'm saying that. It's theory, but
allegedly,
he wasn't going to be the focal point of that offense.
No, you have Tank Dell and Nico Collins. Those two guys are going to be, they're younger, and they're going to be the focal point.
Exactly.
And honestly, Nico Collins is the focal point, not even Tank Dell.
Mm-hmm. No, it's Nico Collins.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your thing. He reworks his contract so that he can leave Dallas within 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And now he signs with a team that gave him, A, a bigger contract than I think a lot of people were expecting this late in free agency. But B, he goes to a team where he's the focal point.
Exactly. Drake May's going to have a
Drake May's going to have a great time throwing to Stephon Diggs. Because who the hell else are you throwing to?
Matt Collins. I guess.
Hey, you know what? Right? If you're snagging up Bills receivers, it's not a bad idea, I would say.
No, it's not.
Not a bad idea at all.
Because look at Matt Collins' leap in production. I mean, leap in production is definitely a way to put it because he really had no chance to produce before that. But he looked like a true wide receiver on the Bills.
And the thing was that Matt Collins, the fact that he was given 2 years with a total of $8 million, like, hey, you take that. You're a journeyman player on this team.
Yeah.
In this league, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a guy and you have a team that's like, hey, 2 years, $8 million, let's go.
You take the best financial deal for you. It's business. And that's honestly what Stephon Diggs did. And he answered it in the press conference. They were like, you see Buffalo twice a year. Was that something you ever thought you'd see? And he's like, I don't think about that when I'm on other teams, like where I could end up.
Right.
But he's like, it's good to be back in the AFC East to see all these guys again regularly. And I don't think it's vengeance related whatsoever. I think that, the initial hit of it was like, oh my God, Diggs is now an AFC East rival. And honestly, I think they're second place in the AFC East next season.
I think he'll have fun with the villain arc, but I'm also going to say, no, you don't need to boo him.
No, no. It's not Jack Eichel.
Because he has never directly insulted the fans.
No. No, he has not.
Not, and I have to say it with concise language, he's never directly insulted the fans. That's what it is.
He even boosted Josh Allen for MVP this past season exactly. While he was injured. He said, shoddy ballin' for real. That's a direct quote, by the way.
That's a tweet quote?
Yep.
But that's the thing. It's a big deal knowing that he's going to end up with being the focal point,
mm-hmm.
being the guy. Here's your chance. Again, to do that.
I think it's
easy.
It's honestly, it's going to be more entertaining to watch Bills-Patriots games now.
Good.
Because those games to end the season last year.
God, this is going to sound arrogant, and I hate every fiber of my being for this. Good. I need a little spice in the AFC East right now. Come on.
Yeah. Running through the Dolphins and Jets. I mean, the Jets, the first game, like we talked about 25 minutes ago, was rather exciting, actually, with the Hail Mary and things
right.
like that. But it's fun to see a divisional opponent actually strengthening a little bit. Because the Dolphins have been the Dolphins, and yes, they won one game in the past few years against you. And then you have the Patriots, who've just been at the bottom since Brady left and Belichick left. They're trying to rebuild. Vrabel was the guy to do it. They're looking, I think they're second place. I think it's Bills, Patriots, Jets, Dolphins next season. I think the Dolphins are just sitting at the bottom.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that I miss having competition for the AFC East?
No, but it's like when you get the fast go-kart at a go-kart track and you're just sitting in front. You're like, you know what? I'm going to slow up here. And I kind of want him to get close and I'm going to pull away, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you want a little bit of competition.
Want a little bit of drama.
We've even said how boring last regular season was until the playoffs.
Right.
Like, when they clinched the division without even playing the Patriots in November? Like, what? It was not fun.
Yeah, the fact that New England had not even seen you.
No.
And you clinched the division without them.
Without playing a divisional opponent.
Without seeing them.
Yes. That was laughable.
It's a sorry state. And
so it's good to see a little bit of competition coming back.
Yeah. And it is kind of funny that, like, who's the next closest threat to the Bills? Oh, it's the same one that put you down for two decades.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
They're doing the right things, though. I got to give New England credit. Mike Vrabel was a great hire.
They still have a lot of work to do with that offensive line, though.
They do, and that's, I think, what's going to be their weakness the entire season. But that you can add to that over time. Like, they've gotten their offense set for a little bit, minus the offensive line.
Let's channel two decades worth of hate real quick, all right?
Okay.
Oh, it'll be so funny if Travis Hunter doesn't go number four to the Patriots. Because then Patriots fans will have to ask themselves, why did Joe Milton have to ball out in week 18 against Buffalo's backups?
Yep.
They'll be like, why? No. And I'm going to be over here going, So yeah, that's where I'm at. Like,
he did ball out.
The thing is that I don't need to hate Stephon Diggs though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still thankful for what he did in Buffalo.
You look back at that 2020 season with
also,
him and Allen.
Remember the thing about the lasting image, the last thing you see about a player before they're gone. What's the lasting image of Stephon Diggs in a Bills uniform, though?
Not even the arms up in the Bengals.
It's the drop.
It's the drop from the can. Yep. The dime right into the breadbasket that he drops.
Against Kansas
And
City.
Then it's this. Mm-hmm. The oh Just so close.
I think that was him saying,
I almost had it.
Yeah.
I don't think it was. That everyone was turned that around and was like, you were this close. I was like, I don't know about that.
Was,
like,
that was we were this close.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly how I interpret that.
Yeah.
Interpret that.
But, I don't think it's a dig.
But the thing is that the last thing that you saw of Diggs in a Bills uniform, the picture that always gets circulated around now is
the drop.
His drop.
There's already edits of him in a Patriots uniform standing there with his hands on his hips, by the way, at Highmark Stadium.
Yeah.
I'm just seeing that going around.
I mean, that's fine. But again, that's the last thing that you saw of Diggs in a Bills uniform. And it's not a good sight. Much like how I mentioned Dylan Cousins.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing that you saw of him in a Sabres uniform was
watching his
it took him way too long to get into a scrum where his captain's getting smacked around by three Lightning players.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
the lasting image does have an effect.
That, it does.
That's absolutely true.
It does.
But I think I'm more excited to see Diggs twice a year. Because even Houston last year, there was a lot of hate behind watching that game. And the Bills lost, right?
And there was a lot of hate behind watching that game because I hated how bad that game was.
Well, yeah, it was disgusting.
Both
at the
teams
end.
Were trying to hand the other the loss.
Yeah.
But or the win. Take your pick.
Even the Allen and Diggs meet up on the field.
Yeah, that little like side eye thing.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
No, ready? That's also someone could be looking at him real quick and then turning away to another person.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, I feel like it's not that deep unless somebody explicitly says so.
Yep. Yep. Agreed. And what are you going to do about it? At this point, I think they're going to be more cordial than not because they know they're going to be seeing each other twice a year. So there's nothing to worry about.
Or he leans into it. I don't know which.
Could be a heel turn. Who knows?
But I do know that he'll have fun with the fans here because he always does.
I wonder if those New England fans are ever going to remember the you.
Those four fans will definitely remember.
Yeah. Yeah, and now he plays for your team.
Yep.
So
you. Words I can't say in radio.
Yep, exactly.
All right, we'll go to break real quick. We'll get Brian Colziel in here as we lead up to Sabres pregame. They take on the Flyers at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly, this is Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR.
To me,
there's a pass to the middle picked off by Hayes. Hayes with a direct line to the net. Bothered backhand save. Reimer rebound. And James Reimer coming up big there to keep this in a two-goal lead.
James Reimer played relatively well as well on Thursday night, and it'll be interesting to see what the deployment looks like over the weekend here for the Sabres, including this afternoon against the Philadelphia Flyers. And as we typically do before a Sabres game on a Saturday, we get Brian Colziel rung up here to talk about, as little of the Sabres as we can for Brian's sake, but we typically still try to get him on here before a Sabres game. Brian, how you doing?
Good morning. Yeah, last week we were trying to figure out ways to not talk about him, but guess what? They won three times. They won three times this week, so maybe they deserve a little bit more of the today.
And boy, did we talk about them, though, last week, Brian. It was probably one of the better conversations that we've had about them. In the terms of a long-term stance on what we need from them at this point to help their image and their off-season going into it as they're in the last 11 games of the season here.
Yeah, I think that they, not to rehash what we did, but for those that didn't hear it, I mean, it starts at the top with Terry Pegula. Like, the image of the team and the perception of it league-wide with coaches and players and media and podcasters and all these things is not good. And you know who can change that? The owner can. And I think, I brought up the example of him going to Calgary in 2011 to go fly to try to convince Robin Regier to accept the trade to Buffalo. Like, I'm not saying that he hasn't tried to help with trades or anything like that, but, like, you have to that getting out, that story, like that just shows, man, the owner is committed. He wants to, he is frontmost a part of this process to the point that he is willing to fly all the way out to Calgary to convince me to do so and tell me why it's a good reason to say yes to this team. And I think with, we know obviously what Buffalo's been in the standings, and we have seen various media outlets report, you know, what are the players, where do they want to play? Well, Buffalo's second last. Oh, let's rank the owners. The owner is last. You know, all these sort of places and things that have come up where there's all this negativity and how they handle the Jack Eichel situation. Like, of course players talk. And Kevin Adams is saying it's hard to make moves. Well, if you want players to take Buffalo off of their no-trade list, then they have to feel better about where the Sabres are at. Now, part of that is going to be helped by if they win and they make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But while there's only so much of that Terry Pegula can control at this moment, he can control what the public's perception is. And I think getting out and making it seem as if that he's still committed 100% and willing to do anything, including flying to Calgary to convince a player to come here, like, I think that's what he's got to do.
And again, not to rehash those things, I did point out as much as I could when I was on either Extra Point Show or today as well, like our conversation that we had last week, Brian, because of the fact that, yeah, there is ways for Pegula to help with that. And I'm going to continue to die on the hill about Mitch Marner, and we don't need to rehash that. We've got all offseason to rehash that. But you just mentioned it as we were starting here. They've won their last three games, and they're 9 points out of the playoffs again. They closed half of the distance they were at a week ago when we were talking. And all that you can go ahead and do is shrug your shoulders and go, why did you lose 13 in a row? Because if you change just two of those games around, we are having a different conversation.
Even if you just give two wins, like you said, that would put them at 70 points. Guess who has the last playoff spot? A team with 75.
Yeah.
And you've got games in hand on some of these teams in front of you as well. Yeah, it would definitely be. I mean, that's all it would take is two wins. If Buffalo had 70 right now, today we're sitting here saying, hey, you could win and you could close within 3 points of a playoff spot. Like, and guess what? You still have Columbus on your schedule. So, yeah, it's painful to think that it even didn't even take that much. The East is there for the taking this year. Nobody wants to win it. This final playoff spot. I want, if anybody today looks at the standings in the East, look at Columbus, who has the last spot in the East, all the way down to Buffalo. You want to see how nobody wants it? Columbus is the last team in. They've won 3 of their last 10. Montreal is the first team out. They've won 3 of their last 10. The Rangers are the next team, 3 of their last 10. The Islanders are the next team, 4 of their last 10. Detroit, 3 of their last 10. Boston, 2 of their last 10. Pittsburgh, 5 of their last 10. Philadelphia, 2 of their last 10. And then Buffalo, 6. So out of wildcard 2 all the way to the bottom, the Sabres have played the best in their last 10. But nobody is reaching out and grabbing this wildcard 2 spot. Ottawa's sitting there saying, oh my goodness, I can't believe no one's pushing us for wildcard 1. We're going to actually make the playoffs. So the Senators are. And by the way, also too, side note, because we always focused on where Buffalo is sitting. The Atlantic Division race is awesome, and I forgot about it. Florida, Toronto, Tampa, all 72 games played. They all have 10 to go, 91, 90, and 89. And it matters this year. Sometimes it doesn't. You're telling me the chance of playing Ottawa, or you got to face one of the other teams? If you're Toronto and you're like, would you rather play the Senators, or do you want to go play Florida or Tampa next? Like, or if you're Florida, you want to go play Toronto? Absolutely not. Sign me up for Ottawa. Ottawa's a nice story, but don't convince me they're on the level of those three teams. Like, I would want to play Ottawa 10 out of 10.
Yeah. And that you'd mentioned all these things. And I just had an audible gasp. You said, look at the last 10 of all these teams. Not only that, Brian, I'm going to do you one better here. Columbus is the only team that has a winning streak of those teams.
Yes.
At all. Montreal lost. Yeah, Montreal lost their last 5. Rangers lost their last 2. Islanders lost their last 3. Red Wings have lost their last 2. Boston has lost 7 in a row. The Sabres, if they were in this playoff race at all and not in last place in the East, they would be the hottest team in the wild card race.
Yep.
I hate it here.
it really is. It's, you know, it really is frustrating because it legitimately was going to be the year that they could have done it. All right, here's another painful stat.
Cool.
Right now, Columbus, who's playing, who's wild card two, they're playing at a 528 save percentage, 528 points percentage for this season. If they stay on that pace, that will give them 86.5 points.
Are you kidding me?
87 points is what's projected to take a wild card spot. 87 is what's projected.
Are we
Buffalo,
trying?
By the way, if they go 11-0 and finish 11-0, they'll have 88.
That's,
you know,
first of all,
if you
to win 11 in a row would be some sort of karmic retribution for losing 13 in a row. I'll take it. But also, you know, I guess we're ending the show for me depressed, like how I was starting the show. My guys in Purdue lost, and I'm like, okay, cool. I'm sad to start the show. Now I'm going to be sad to end it, Brian.
On a brilliantly run inbound play. That was
That was too good.
That was a nice play.
But hey, you know what? If you're going to go out, at least go out on a buzzer beater like that. Because most of the Sweet 16 round was not close games. So I'll take it. If you're going to go out, don't go out like a chump.
It's the final eight, one versus two, one versus two, one versus two, and one versus three. We definitely did not get any of these Cinderella stories this year. I always feel like you need one. These matchups are going to be very good, but it'd be kind of cool if there was one, you know, 11 seed mid-major team in there just to have a little Cinderella possibility.
We need a Loyola Chicago in there, you know, represent the little guy.
Yep.
Brian, appreciate you taking the time again. And we're not running as late as we did last week, but we got to go. So we'll hear you more on pregame coming up.
Okay. Thanks, Derek.
Brian Koziel there. You'll hear from him plenty more coming up next. Sabres and Flyers pregame starting next here on WGR.